chance. They're pretty confident.
Well, I got the radar here. Right. That star, that asterisk is where we are. So I think we're going to get it any minute.
Call our meeting back to order. We're going to work on some planning and zoning some more.
Jim, I'm so excited.
Jim is very excited.
I got me a cup of coffee.
Look, this is just the page on that permit extension, the top part as we revised it. I did give this to our board Monday night just so they can start reviewing what they'll discuss and do whatever they do in December, but just to get them started. But that was how it was given to me for the rewrite on the permit extension. So I want to let you know that you had that just in case.
Now, when you said for the rewrite, is this what we talked about?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
That's how that played out. So if you want to review that or do whatever, but that's, after we had everything marked up and finished, that's what it looked like it said.
Eddie, would you mind to review me? Who you do this writing? Bob be a part? Was he a part of it at all?
As we sat here, Bob and I had a copy it was marked out on, and then I took the marked up copy and did the rewrite of this. I didn't change any words or anything. Basically, we just took some words out. I think we added the words in the approved plan on the very last sentence. The rest of it was where we deleted words from the previous part of that. And if you need a copy of what's in the code book right now, I can give that to you if you like. But.
Okay. Paulson's happy. No, that's fine. You don't need to give it to me. Paulson happy with it? Has he had a chance to look at it?
When he left here, he said here. So I'm guessing that he didn't have any big concerns about it or anything like that. I'm sure he'll review it again. And as we've got these things finished, we can review those and whatever might need to happen there can happen.
Can I chase a rabbit 5 minutes?
Absolutely.
Maybe 10.
A big rabbit.
Seven and a half.
Well, you didn't talk most of the first hour, so you can double up here.
I'm sorry about, but I did want to express some feelings that I had so that the public would know how I felt about things.
You got feelings.
hey, lay off there, big boy.
One point I'd like to make is, as you all know, I've sat in most of our planning and zoning commission meetings, and I'm here to defend our planning and zoning commission. Comments that they have done things because of where the property is that it didn't matter to them because it wasn't close to them or it was in their backyard so they didn't want it. I have not seen that, and I just want that. That's my only point. I don't know that we answered our mayor's, and I don't know that we've answered the question. I think this is something that we definitely need to do, and that's what prompted my request, was are we going to have outside help? Or are we going to continue our contract with Aegis, or are we not? And this coming to me is what prompted my comments, part of my comments, and that is, I got a sense that this is probably fine and dandy and doesn't need anyone else to look at it. But at some point, we need to consider, nail down for sure, are we going to use someone besides Eddie and Bob to write this code and the county commission and the planning and zoning commission? I think that's important. Maybe y'all don't. And you blow it off if you like, of course, but I think at some point I know we've got to determine whether we're going to continue our contract with Aegis or not.
Here, I got your cigarette here.
And again, the sense I heard this morning from each fellow sitting on each side of me here, we got two different ideas coming. Mm-hmm. And we got a new presiding coming, and I don't know if you all have been visiting with him. I have not. But it may be one of these situations where we've got two against one showing the direction. And I know it's not fun when you're the one and the other two are getting to go their way, and you just got to swallow and get going. So
right.
Hope you guys can do that as we move forward. And again, I hope that Ron did get the invitation that as soon as he can get involved in this, this is, appears to be an important thing to everybody. I don't think anybody's blowing on that. And I think it would be well that he get involved in that. And I think I've said this before, but I'll say it again just for good to be double darn sure, and that is we were challenged at Kirbyville School to have something done by the end of the year by Mr. Derby.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him right after the meeting, I said, John, it ain't going to happen, in my opinion. It's not going to happen. We're not going to get anything done by December. I hope I'm wrong.
Changes are new.
He was asking for a draft of a new code, if I understood him correctly. Some changes, I believe we're going to see that. You're working on that, and I hoorah for that. Way to go. But I don't want the public to have, nobody may be listening at all, it doesn't matter, but I don't want the public to have this idea that we're going to have a new code at the end of the year, because I don't think it's realistic. I'm optimistic. I hope we'd have that. But right now, we're, you know, just after I sat through this morning's meeting, I see Manny saying one direction. I hear Jim saying another direction. And
well, I think it'll be a common ground solution that we come to, and hopefully acceptance by both parties to reach that common ground. And if you don't express the way you feel and mean it, and Jim had said what he way he felt and meant it, he knows how I feel, and if we can compromise and come to a common ground, I think that'll be great.
I agree. I think that would be great. I don't see it happening, though, to be honest.
But Mr. Derby, he's not leaving with any expectations like that, because he started to walk back up in the stands, and I just made it plain, if you listen to the tape, that we cannot have this done. It took years and years and years for this to take place, and we cannot have it done to the first. He wanted to know if we could have it done to the first of the year, and I said no.
And Danny, I said that I talked to him as well and told him, and that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
I don't have any question in my mind that he believes, for me, that it's not going to happen. But all the public heard that request, and the public, except for him, may be thinking, well, those guys, they're going to have us a new code come December 31st for penalties office, and we'll have a look at it.
Right.
Y'all think that can happen? I mean, be straight.
We'll get through your questions. I know
you
wrote lots of notes.
That's my only point.
My biggest thing that I think we've got...
I'd like my extra time kept for later.
We will make sure that... Make a note in the record keep if he gets his extra 6 minutes per hour. One thing I was going to ask you, though, is we've got to figure out what are we... I mean, it sounded like even with the mayor's conversation we had, it sounded like we were not even in agreement where we're doing in this meeting. I thought, and maybe it was just me, I thought we were moving forward with a new code book, trying to modify an existing code book versus retrofitting our existing code book. Now, parts I heard that from you, Commissioner Strahan, that you were for that, and parts I heard you said, no, we weren't for that. I think the direction is, I think if we wanted to put our minds to it, we could actually get something in draft form by the end of the year. However, we got to make sure we don't, that the direction is clearly set. And I'm less sure than I was 2 hours ago of what the direction is.
And that would have to be priority as far as that project.
I guess...
Humor me just a second, since you stuttered a half a second. Are you saying we've got this handed? This is right in front of our face.
That is
permit extension.
Uh-huh.
And I'm hoorah, I think we need to do this.
Right.
Are you in favor of doing that?
This?
Which would be amending our current code.
That's a temporary fix, yes.
You're okay with that?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure from what you said.
No, I'm sorry. I think we need to temporarily fix what we can to pacify existing and emergencies right now. Because we know that's going to be in the future code book, whatever code book we're going to have, we know that's going to be in there in some form because that's the direction of planning and zoning for the county. And then the other thing was to eliminate potential lawsuits that we heard were coming because that was of this issue specifically.
And when you asked about the wording, I have just two better words. It's the same meaning. Instead of omitting special use, I put in except special use permits. It means the same thing, it's just a little clearer. In the approved plan, I put an approved plan.
An approved plan.
Other than that, I think it sounds great.
And I can make those correct.
Yeah, I want to make a statement here because I don't really understand. Jim, where do you think I'm double talking?
Not double talking. Right now, I think we all in agreement. This book, as it sits, the Clay County book, and I assume that's the direction we're trying to go to.
I reference that book much.
Okay. I believe it's too thick, and I think you believe it's too thick. But the reality is, it may end up being 200 pages long. It may be twice as thick as our existing code book, and I know that's a concern to you. But I don't know. There may be no way to fix that. So I don't want to throw away the Clay County book just because we can't get it under a certain page number.
The thing of it is, if they've got a great idea, if the mayors have a great idea, or if a citizen out here has a great idea, I'm willing to look at all of it because this is a concern. Now, I want to address a couple of things. One is we have a absolute positively problem with trying to make a budget that is satisfactory to the county this year. We have to have that done before the first of the year.
Right.
We have a planning and zoning situation that we have to have done before the first of the year. Those things cannot be accomplished, and the budget has to be done. The P&Z has been a problem for some time. So we can work on it and make these amendments that need to be made to avoid certain things that are coming up. But to finish that, and that's when Mr. Derby started to walk up the steps the other night, and I said, and I tried to make that perfectly clear, that wasn't going to happen because he wanted a commitment from all of us.
Right.
And I told him that if we would work on it, we were committed to it because we were working on it now. But it wasn't going to happen. So anyway, I just want to make sure, I want a matter of cohesiveness between us that we can come to common ground and try to do what we think is best for the citizens.
Right.
Okay, since nobody else is talking, I've got a question on 4.9. I'm hearing two of us for sure say that they're ready to, are you ready to work on this, Danny?
Yeah.
On this extension?
Yeah.
Question, I don't want to make it difficult. If it's not pertinent, say, forget it. If on a division 1 and 2, the first paragraph, if they don't come in before the year is up, what happens then?
Tenney County has no provisions for any kind of penalties or anything like that. We try to encourage them to keep the project active. So really,
they just kind of...
Nothing happens. I mean, we should put a stop work order on it. We don't do many of those.
For those listening and for the commissioners who aren't necessarily following, maybe they're all following, what's a Division 1 and Division 2?
Division 1 is residential-type construction, homes, garages, storage buildings, things like that that require a permit. Division 2 deals with commercial, whether it be an office building or condominiums, whatever the case might be.
I guess, let me ask Bob, I'll put it to you, you're a good old attorney. It says the extension must be received prior. Do we need to put anything else in there? In other words, a project doesn't get done within the year, they let the time go by, they get a stop work order, or they get a phone call or something, whatever, the that your permit's not good anymore, can the planning and zoning office extend it or renew it?
What they would do is they would come back in and get a new Division One or a Division Two. Am I right?
If they don't, if they extend it, there's one cost. If they have to get a new permit, it's a different cost. So okay. It would behoove you to extend it, but otherwise, yes, they should come in and get a new permit.
The reason for requiring somebody to come in on Division One and Division Two, it's not something that is a rezoning that has to be approved through the system. So basically what they have to do is get a permit telling them how to build it and what rules to follow. And the reason for putting a one-year limitation on it is maybe those rules have changed within that year. So if you haven't started building it to a considerable amount of completion, then and you haven't started building at all, well, okay, you're still approved, but you need to come back in and see what the new rules are, if there are any new ones, and reapply, get a new permit.
Okay, sounds good. So bottom line, to my concern, shall we let this go? Is it okay like it is, you think, Bob? Looking at you now.
I think it's fine. It says you must get it, so if you don't get it, you're in violation and they put a stop work order on you. You can't proceed without a Division One or Division Two permit.
Now, is that completion?
But they could come back in and get a new one. It would cost them a buck more, so to speak.
It's about a third.
As long as something haywire wasn't there.
And when you say completion, we don't normally go into landscaping and that kind of thing. But if the building's habitable,
if they've started building the building to a certain setback, and we've changed the setbacks, and they've already relied on their permit, that's not a problem.
No, that's not an issue.
They're not going to have to comply with the new because they've already relied on the old one. But if they haven't built at all, they're going to have to build to the new setback if it's 12 feet instead of 10.
Okay,
feet.
Bob, here's the deal. And I guess maybe this is one of those little things that bug me, is we have a situation where we have a financial time that I might have plans to do something in an area, and maybe I've got just a little bit of extra money, and I want to start as I can and build as I go, and I don't want to come in here for 3 years if it's going to take me 3 years to finish a project get a permit every year. Do you understand where I'm coming from?
And what I would tell you is that if you've substantially relied upon the other permit, for instance, you've set out all your lots and you've put your electric to all the lots, but you haven't built but a couple of the buildings. But on those lots, you cannot satisfy a 12-foot setback in the back, and it was a 10. And you can't do that now on all your lots. You've substantially relied upon the other permit, and you shouldn't be required to now all of a sudden change all the permits unless you can within your current plan.
But here's
he's just saying nothing's changed. He just didn't want to have to get permit after permit after permit because he just hadn't had the money or to finish. We, according to our code book, now are required to issue a certificate of conformance stating that the building was done. It's one of the things that can be used, and I think only since I've been here once has it been. By the assessor to show that building has been completed and should go on the tax rolls. I think there's five or six things like that. We cannot issue a CFC on that until the building is habitable. So we have to keep the folder open and keep checking and everything like that on it. So
you don't have to apply for the permit every year. If it's going to be 2 years, come in and apply for the permit when you're ready to go.
Well, he's saying, though, he might come in and build some and then save his money, and then the next year he may come in.
I built my home that way. Took me. I let my home set for a year with just the studs and everything
and
wiring. It didn't have sheetrock or
kind of what he's saying.
How much is Division 1 and Division 2?
Division 1 is 50, renewal is 15. Division 2 is 100. Now, normally on your Division 2, you know, we told people don't get it till you're ready to build. If they let it lapse, they don't have to come and get it, but when they're ready to build maybe another year or two down the road, then they can come back in and get another permit. That's not an issue. I mean, whenever they need it, it's just cheaper for them to renew that than it is to it's cheaper to renew it three times probably than it is to buy another one a year or two down the road.
Save $5 by renewing three times instead of buying a new one 4 years.
But it just, you know, it's there to, you know, ensure that the project is still in compliance that the permit's active, because we have a lot of people call and say they started building over here and now they've stopped, they've left stuff everywhere, the neighborhood kids are playing on it and everything like that. What's going on? Well, if we say, well, they had a permit but it's no longer active, a lot of times you guys might get the call and say, I got a nuisance over here, or something to that effect. It's not something that we have built in our code to deal with, abandoned job sites or anything like that. We've had that with some commercial developers also, and we just don't have anything that we can do. It has to fall into your nuisance thing there. So
I'm good with Bob's corrections. I got one more question though on considerations. That means that if there's a plan and any of these considerations fit, then they will be looked at, and if something fits there, then they may have to go through the process again.
Well, under considerations, all I did was, as I was researching and writing these things, these are ideas that came into my head that I wanted you guys to think about as we begin to look. This is not anything that's going in the code book. That's just...
I didn't read the considerations.
That's just at that particular time before we got into this, and that was there last week. And I don't, I'm not saying I care one way or another about these, just wanted to see if that's anything that y'all had any concerns about and everything. Right now, if we change a piece of property, we do it specifically for the requested use on the requested property, but we don't really have anything that you would call rights of ownership. If you buy this piece of property commercial, then here's everything that you can do permitted, and then here's a list of conditional, and there would be a way to do conditional. But right now, we say you've asked for this on this; that's what you have. And everything, so we don't.
You're talking about downzoning here,
but let's excuse me for interrupting. But to keep us from chasing something, maybe is this good enough for what I understand our plan is, and that this is an emergency type of action on our current plan to take care of this problem.
Yes, this will fix that, and I think is easily adaptable into the new system that you would go to, because that right there would come out completely. Once you rezone something, it comes with its own list of permitted uses and everything like that, so there would be no need.
All we're doing is recognizing the law on rezoning.
Okay.
Just restating what the law is, that once it's rezoned, it is that
correct.
Zoning.
Humor me two more minutes. Number three. No permitted uses by right of ownership.
We don't have any right now.
I'm sorry, I don't understand that.
That means if you buy a piece of property under district zoning, in district zoning, there's a list of things that just by you being the owner of it, you're allowed to do. You might have to still get a construction permit, stuff like that. But if you want to have if you bought a piece of property that's zoned commercial and you want to have a car lot on it, it's legal. If you want to have a restaurant on it, that's legal. There's some other rules and everything. Those are rights by ownership.
Okay.
And then you'll have conditional rights by ownership. These things are permitted in these areas, but there may be a process to go through to get there, depending on how you
set. If I own property on Fall Creek Road, and the previous owner has got a Division 3 permit to build a project, and I buy that property, can I build that same project?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right now you can do that.
All right.
But in the future, you may buy that and not want to do his project, but you may want to do something similar.
That's why the language says if you change the plan, you may have to.
You may have
to. Right.
I would like to make a motion that we accept.
Has the board, is this an official recommendation to
you? No.
Oh, I thought this had come from the board.
My board cannot discuss until December.
Given that, may I change the wording just a little bit more on that one? Changes or deviations in an approved plan shall result rather than may. I don't think we should. Shall result in reapplication. Shall result in a requirement.
Shall require reapplication?
Shall require reapplication.
I might be an attorney.
Yes, you're there.
Before you go there, let me tell you this.
Because you're opening a can of worms when you say that word.
Shall means you will.
That means there is no variance.
But if they change the plan in a less intense way, we wouldn't require them.
But this wording would
require significant.
Well, that's... That's subjective.
That is good.
So then leave it may and leave it alone.
Right.
He can't do that. He can't leave it alone. No.
Significant is subjective.
You're leaving discretion.
May is discretionary.
So it's significant.
I don't.
It's less discretionary. It's maybe not as specific.
49% change.
I mean, there's some changes we would look at and automatically go, no big deal. But there's some changes you look at and go, whoa.
I go with Bob. That. Significant.
So I guess we are going to change this a bit. So.
Significant changes or deviations in an approved plan shall require reapplication to the Planning Commission.
Well, I would ask that we accept this slightly changed document and ask the Planning and Zoning Commission to look at it. They meet Monday, right?
Yes, sir. I'll give this to them on Monday. They've got this original copy.
Any objections?
I got a question.
I don't have any objections. I'd answer your question specifically, Mr. Chairman.
Well, my question is if I decided that I wanted to sell some property in the future for maybe not even having plans for it, but I decided that I wanted to sell some property in the future, and I come in and submitted that I wanted to do a quite extensive plan for a residential area, and really didn't have anything in mind, but I got it approved by the Planning and Zoning Commission, and my time expanded, then I could fall back on selling it to somebody that wasn't going to do half of it like I was going to do it. So he could go ahead and do it.
If I can, let me see if I understand what you're saying, for sure. You come in and say you set aside a piece of land, you're going to do 100 lots in there, single-family homes, everything like that. And you go on a ways and you put it up for sale, and somebody comes in and says, I'd like to buy that, but I only want to do 50 lots. He can go ahead and do.
Yeah, and another thing, what I was saying was, you know, whenever I present the deal, well, I say that there's going to be, you nail it on what you're talking about. I'm going to have a sewer plant, I'm going to have curb and guttering and on my streets and buried underground and all this kind of stuff. Then somebody comes in and says, well, I'm going to do 50 lots, and that's quite a bit less. Is he going to be held to the same standards? What I'm saying is, does he have to go through the process? Because we're talking about significant.
Well, first of all, his plan is going to have to be approved by DNR to be sized for the amount of lots that he's going to put in there. So whether, you know, as long as he doesn't exceed the 100 or whatever the case may be.
Just a question. The reason I thought that was because if I had a tract close to the city, just like they were talking this morning, and I decided that I wanted to make sure that I had the opportunity for a quick sale or whatever I wanted to do, I'd just say, well, here's what it says on here, that if you don't do, I've got her to the max, and I got it approved, but
if he does less as a rule, it's fine. Now, you might come into an issue.
He probably would come into an issue.
With curb and gutter and that kind of thing like that for this reason. If that was put on the decision of record right now, the way things are, if that was put on the decision of record, it said curb and guttering, then we would hold him to curb and guttering, even though he wanted to come in and do something less. However,
if he wanted to do something more along those lines, he wouldn't have a problem.
As long as he wasn't increasing this. Now, Road and Bridge currently has a set of road standards and everything like that, and I believe when you get into that kind of a situation with density and everything like that, that he does prescribe the kind of road and the...
He's trying to cover the track.
I understand.
It's like if they require a certain screening from your neighbors for whatever reason, okay? Mm-hmm. And you come in and you want to do less screening, that's going to be a problem. If you want to do even more screening,
not a problem.
That's not a problem.
All right. Good job, guys. What's next?
We were going to do duplexes, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
I gave you one of these, right?
Yeah.
That's liable to be too hard.
We're asking this a whole lot, guys, and several different things. And I guess I would ask you to...
And before you jump into that, can we have a little discussion here?
Yes.
Just so we can cause more delays and possible confusion.
Right. Take every opportunity we have.
Absolutely. And let's step away from this what Eddie just handed out, and just from a perspective of, Chuck asked three questions earlier when he was speaking, and one of them was, are we going to continue the Aegis contract, and or are we going to use someone else to help write the new code book? Is it beyond Eddie and Bob? Which, good, legitimate questions. Would it, I know duplexes are an issue, okay, I do know that. However, is that as pressing as starting with the code book? I mean, we chose the Division 3 because that was pressing. Let me finish my statements first, Bob, before you start interrupting.
Bad,
I'm on my second sentence of my time, and he's interrupting.
I'll gavel him if he dares move in on your
just
conversation.
Just throw it at me. See if you're good aim. Don't break the glass behind me. So the question is, do we venture off into the Clay County code book and spend our available time with that? Because my concern is we could find hundreds of individual issues with the code book, and we could spend our entire time in our blocks addressing individuals that are important but maybe not be pressing. Or just do we spend that same time just with Eddie and an engineering firm going through this Clay County and says strip out the building codes, get this thing stripped down as bare as possible without losing the integrity of the code book, and customize it to Taney County? I mean, that's my conversation I want to have right here. Okay.
Has Eddie looked at the Clay County book?
Many times.
Concerning duplexes.
Yes. Okay. Matter of fact, I've even as we were looking at some of these topics
last week.
I've
done several. I'm referencing a lot of different books. I think there's some areas in our code book that are not going to be dealt with clearly by any other person's code book that we pick up. I think duplexes is one of those.
Okay.
I think
of building codes.
That's part of it, and everything like that. Because in some areas they just don't. They simply say if you don't have public facilities, no duplexes. I don't know if that's the stand we want to take or anything like that. So I think there's four or five issues, and I think we've looked at the bigger part of those. Those four or five issues. If we can clarify that, then we can take and begin to meld a couple of books. But I think. We're still going to have to look at these particular issues and deal with them as a county. How do we want to handle that? Because I don't think there's going to be a drop-in fit for anybody else. Even if we go,
let me explain why I'm in favor of going on with the duplex.
Okay,
because it's been on our table for the longest period of time. Two different folks comes to mind right off the bat.
Okay.
And if we wait, I'd say, I mean, they've been waiting for 6 months or a year. I don't know how long they've been waiting for us to address this problem.
And our board looked at this in March, trying to see, and they felt like there were some issues. I'm going to let you talk since I'm done here. They did review it, had an attorney drop some stuff into us and reviewed it and just said, we've got some issues here that as a commission, we don't think we can overcome. So they voted to wait and see what was going to happen as we changed the code book.
I think it's too complicated. I think that what we were talking about is a division of property, not a code, building code. I think that settles the whole stinking thing. If we have a regulation on division of property, then we don't have any building code. We don't have anything. It's a requirement of a structure that division of property, and it's addressed that way.
If I may, I apologize for earlier anticipating the entire question before it was completed, but the big question is, do we venture off into Clay Counties and attempt to redraft that, removing the building codes? And I don't think that's time well spent. It's certainly not time efficient. You asked if Eddie or I were qualified. We're certainly not experienced in writing a code. whether we're qualified to learn what we're doing as we go and do a good job. It certainly wouldn't be an efficient use of our time. There are people who write codes and do a very good job at it and do it on a regular basis or a semi-regular basis, perhaps even teach about it. So if we want the Clay County as our model, it might be a good idea to get someone who does this sort of thing on a regular basis, who doesn't cost too much, to remove the building codes for us and make it as vanilla as they can, the Clay County model, then take that and make our comments on that and use our comments back to the person that drafted it for them to come back with a finished product, which may not be the final accepted product, but would be a finished product. I think that's the best way to go, my suggestion. That sort of person would know what is legal also. There would be legal review probably of the code as they draft it, as they go. And that would be the most time-efficient, most effective way of doing it. But that's just me.
Well, Bob, let me ask you a question. And tell me some legal issues. Why, just like a privacy fence between two pieces of property, can we not delegate a certain standard for a firewall, which will follow all the fire codes and everything else, as a division of property in this situation and problem solved?
It's more than a firewall. It's not just a firewall.
And that's, Mr. Strahan, I did write that in here. This cover sheet here was a little bit when I originally started, but on your second page there, if you'll see the next about two-thirds of the way down on that where it says requirements, I did put that statement in there that we had talked about. Now, whether it can stay or not, I don't know, but it is in there because that does get rid of some of the problems. You're absolutely correct.
Jim, and I'm going to go, I know exactly where you're going. You're going with paint and keeping your side up and all those. That has to be something that they'll have to handle through covenants and restrictions. But
if there's no covenants, I mean, it's just a single bill, a single lot out there.
And that was one of my questions.
We've got a single lot, not in a subdivision. They want to build a duplex. They want to live personally on one side, sell the other side out. There's no covenants. There's no restrictions. There's no POA, Property Owners Association, nothing. Then what happens?
Question I don't know the answer to, is it legal to require them to have an agreement? Most of these duplexes, the title companies will tell you there needs to be a party wall agreement. Who takes care of the wall? If there's a problem with the wall and it needs repair, who pays for it when it's a common wall? You need a party wall or a common wall agreement. When you have a duplex, you probably need all of these issues dealt with in an agreement between the parties on the two sides. Can we require such an agreement before we allow duplexes to be built? Can we say you need to have an agreement dealing with these issues before? Not say what goes in it, but you have an agreement dealing with these issues, and can we do that? I don't know the answer to that question.
Covenants and restrictions required.
I've got a lot of questions and everything, but first of all, and we've strayed again from where we were. But if we're ready to get into duplexes, I'd like to throw out a couple things to you, but if we still want to talk about it.
I think if I could interrupt, we should go back to Jim's, which kind of went back to mine, and I think we should answer that question. We should make that decision. Are we going to... Well, you've got two questions now, I think. Is one, is the county commission going to go through the Clay County book, or are we going to get a professional to go through it?
I think we've already.
And the other question is, are we going to go ahead and work on a duplex?
And if you have a suggestion to another book.
Well, I mean, I've gone through a bunch, and they all have pros and cons. They really
exactly.
do. And so, I mean, I've gone through seven or eight probably at this point, and they all have. Some are great, some are like it just doesn't apply to us, and it's too restrictive or it's so vague that we're no better off. I'm fine. If you're fine with Clay County, I was fine with Clay County.
I like the organization of Clay County.
So the big question is, I still think we're going to have to deal with duplexes individually.
We are.
For Taney County. So I think we need to address that. But the other question is, do we want to have Aegis
sit down with Eddie using the Clay County book and start stripping out things that don't apply and give it, like Bob said, a vanilla template for us to customize to Taney County. That's, I guess, part of the question is, we can do it simultaneously. We don't have to be involved in every meeting,
right?
If we've got capable people making the book prepared. I know, Danny, go ahead.
Okay, I think you, Jim, you've already covered what we've already voted on. We had a, when Mr. Aegis was sitting there and he asked about the contract. Now, you covered this, watch me, Eddie, on this, because I think that we said that after all revisions and changes were made, that we were going to have Aegis hired by the hour to review.
We did talk about presenting them something to review and make sure that it met codes and everything. I wasn't privy to all the conversations that went on.
But are you remembering that, Jim, now?
I remember that. The problem is we never voted.
We talked about that.
We talked about it, but we never voted. And that's the problem. We never voted.
Okay.
Another question would be, and I have to ask this, would he just be the right entity to draft and do a good job with a modification of the Clay County Code for us and be time efficient and money efficient in doing that? Or is there another entity more suited?
They have land planning experience. They've done code books in the past. The time efficiency cost, I don't know. I mean, I don't know the answer to that. I mean, do they have the experience? Yes. And are they capable? Do they have a capable staff? Yes. The other part of your question, I'm not even going to venture to even guess if that's what the rates would be and their timing.
Right now, whenever we're looking into this stuff, I reference at least 7 or 8 different code books before you get these sheets that I've given you today. Because, as Mr. Strophis has said, some of them have a real good idea here, but over here you're going, what were you thinking? We want to do what works for us best, and we don't necessarily want to reinvent everything.
You need a holistic approach. You block the hole over here, another hole develops over there.
Bob, I'm going to just get down to the cut and dried, because you ask a question, what goes wrong with a firewall? Who's responsible? It's pretty simple. I mean, lots of duplexes have a stinking privacy fence that runs right straight off of the building, right off the patio, and out to the property line. If something happens to that, who's responsible?
There's no agreement. It's unclear. Whoever put it up, I guess.
But here's the deal. What I'm saying is, can't this county commission require covenants and restrictions and have a firewall and the privacy fence in the same thing as in a duplex? And why couldn't we? I mean, and that puts us off the hook. I don't see that at that point it becomes a civil matter. Because if they don't want to fix it, one side don't, and you know that's going to happen, and the other side will, that's a civil matter.
It's not financially feasible if you have a single mom, all of a sudden his husband has left her and she has no business.
So, I mean, what's wrong with that? I'm just asking the question, and maybe I'm not thinking on the
broad
scale.
Well, I don't know what the legal I don't know. I mean, that's Bob mentioned that too. That may be fine. I have no idea. But I think the question before that was, what are we going to do with Clay County Book? How are we going to move forward with it? I think we still need to, Danny, answer your questions with the duplex, and we've got to dive in and say, can we do what Danny's suggesting? Is that legally bound? But more importantly, what are we doing with the book? I mean, we're going to have to deal with these individual issues that are specific to Taney County.
But we've ignored Mr. Paulson to this point on his question about Aegis, whether they're... Well, we haven't totally ignored it because you mentioned that they have experience.
Mm-hmm.
When you, so to speak, brought them to us, I took you on that, and I did not, got to admit, I did not research that.
Mm-hmm.
To answer that question, I think I would be wise to talk with a few of their previous customers and see if they were satisfied. Personally, from the one thought I had about them is, sad to say, well, I'm not sad to say, but it's been a hard road to get to, but they have come to know Taney County have an office here, of course, but that's not what I'm talking about. They've come to know three commissioners fairly well, and Eddie, and some of the P&Z folks. That's some water under the bridge that we could take advantage of. But Bob's got a good question. Now, we've got two questions we've got to answer. That question, and do we want to hire someone to do that?
Let me partially answer. Statement of qualifications are on file with Linda Gifford.
Okay.
So if you want to go get all the land planning people, the different vendors had submitted that before we chose Aegis, back because of the East-West Corridor, way back then, they listed a packet of statement of qualifications. So HDR, Great River. So that's a starting point for you to do some research and references and all the things that they're talking about. Now,
we're also a member of SMACOG, and while we've had some issues there before with the master plan and all that sort of thing, what we're talking about now is just drafting a code. And we may have some capabilities of getting something for less money because we're a member of an organization and they have students in the planning area or maybe a professional draft it for us. And, you know, that's at least worth looking at as well.
He's bright again.
It happens.
We've even got, if I remember right, some hours that are paid for by being a member of that. And Diane, I assume she's still there.
I don't know.
Very patient with us. I was pleased with, you know, we didn't do a master plan. That was lots of work and stuff, but that's a good idea, I believe.
Does anyone in court contact them and bring them in?
If it's still a service that we've got coming and they have time to do it, I think that's something we should at least have him make a phone call and kind of try to get a sense of whether that's a good idea or not.
Maybe a horrible idea. I don't know.
May not be.
Was she involved in the building code?
No, not at all.
Who was the lady that came in and did the demonstration?
That was somebody from the national organization, Boca, or whatever it is.
I think City of Branson probably gave me the contact.
Let me give you a quick summary of what you guys are talking about, and you know where I feel, and then that way you can just circle around me or do whatever you want to. I'm telling you that we've got a problem at P&Z with a public image, and we go from 106 pages to 230 pages, and that petition that they have will be put out there, and this will be put to a vote. If you have no concern about it being passed, well, then you don't have any problem. But if you have any concern whatsoever about it being passed, we better make considerations. And that's all I'm telling you. I'm not going to get out and voice my opinion one way of support or non-support on that issue because I think it's time for the people to speak. But I can tell you that every coffee shop's talking about it and everybody else is. And if you increase more than double the regulations that's already existing, I don't care if they're the best ones that ever was. You're going to get her brought to a vote, and that's what I'm trying to stop.
Well, I know there are people currently collecting signatures, so it may just happen anyway. So, I mean, whatever you think.
Well, there's no guarantee either that the pages will increase or anything. There's a lot of drawings in our code book right now. You know, there's stuff in this code book you wouldn't use.
Well, Clay County's is it broken down to 15 parts and no section is bigger than 23 pages.
Right. That's one of the things I like about this code book because it's just real easy to find what you're looking for.
It is.
And everything's grouped together there and it's pretty decent. What you've got to remember is that everything that the county deals with is not in this book. I mean, if you want complete road standards and everything, they're not all in here. And there are some road standards in here that it really should come out and everything. But, you know, if you want all the sewer requirements, they're not in here and everything. So, you know, there's different things like that probably have helped to keep this book smaller and everything. There's things in here that I don't think really need to be in this book. I mean, when it starts, you know, it starts getting into some technical calculations for stormwater runoff and stuff like that, I don't know that all that needs to be there.
I brought up the building code because it got defeated so severely. But the fact of it is one of the main things that got built, and you hear it out in the public, is whenever they start carrying in the regulations for building codes, and the lady had to have two people carry in the books, and they were about this
sure.
stack, yeah. armed, stacked up there. Mm-hmm. You know, that just sends out a terrible message.
I think your code book needs to be comprehensive enough to explain so that if you come in and ask me, you're going to get what mm-hmm. the book says, not, well, the book says this, and here's how.
So it takes care of the legal issues, but right. it's put us in as simple language as possible for the layperson
and
to
if
understand.
And if it's not something we're going to use or enforce or anything like that, it doesn't need to be there.
Yeah.
And it ends up what it ends up. I mean, we put some pictures in there just to help, but.
And I don't have any set number on
right.
what the code book should be. I don't want you to think that.
Well, can we focus on getting help or not getting help?
Yep, let's get help.
All right, getting help, Mr. Strahan, before you walk out the door for break.
Getting help for
hiring a professional review. Planning person to
review
the
after
Clay County book.
Somebody else has worked at or review the Clay County?
Well, I think we're talking about the Clay County book unless you've got a better option.
Have him review it.
All right. Okay.
Are we going to have Eddie break down what he thinks we don't want first?
Yeah, I mean, we can easily.
We put time into it. That's what I'm saying. It's got to be priority.
And it'll take a little while for us to choose because we're going to have to choose a couple things. We're going to have to review the land planning engineers or help, and if we choose somebody besides Aegis, we need to formally. Right now, we've suspended that contract. We would have to formally cease that contract and enter into a new contract. So that's going to take a little bit of time. So Eddie will have time to mark up the book a little bit. But I think our chances of accelerating this sooner versus later is getting outside help.
I think with this particular book, the way it's split up, we could just start through it and take however you want to be involved with it. We do it section by section. We say this needs to be added from our book, taken away from this book, different things like that. We can make those kind of notes.
I'd like to request that Angie mark our records today to show that we got three commissioners agreeing to
hire help for the code book.
So the next,
so I'm going to call Smaycock.
You're calling Smaycock.
And we're requesting Eddie to call Smaycock and see what they might have to offer.
What assistance we have available there. So
it'd be nice to have it go out and have, you know, we've got to remove the building codes from the Clay County if we're going to utilize the Clay County. Mm-hmm. But along with that, maybe have a list of concerns that we need addressed in the draft code. And then when it comes back to us, we can review and add, subtract, whatever, and give it back to them for final drafting.
And do you want a review of the Clay County code book?
Yes, specifically the Clay County.
How many pages do we have in our road standard? Because you said it is in this one, right?
Is it incorporated or is it in?
In our book or in Clay County?
In Clay County.
Clay County mentions, let me see if they, I believe they do have a section in here on roads. And I don't know how deep ours are, but let me see.
We don't have Frank's codes in our book.
No.
We reference folks to follow those codes.
See, they have their
separately. That needs to be brought out because
they have their floodplain in here.
Well, they're each meeting.
We don't.
Each meeting a project.
They do have a road section in here.
The code, the road and bridge code.
But shouldn't they know that? I mean, shouldn't that be in the book? And that adds to the number of pages, which I don't have any problem with that. If we got, you say, well, you're going to have to build your roads to the Taney County road standard.
But that's just one line, Danny. If you want it in the book, that's fine. But it's just one line that says.
You can keep stuff in your code, or you can have separate, like subdivision regulations are oftentimes separate from the zoning code. those can be included in or they can be separate.
Parking and access standards right now runs probably about 10 to 11 pages for us, partially because of pictures and everything like that. And then we go into road standards.
But Frank's is not in there.
No, sir, it's not. This is what's always been in. And our hope was to pull this out. It gives just some very basics, you know, minimum street size and stuff like that, according to what Frank's got, maybe a couple charts, and then just say, you know, all required roads will be built to the minimum defined standards of Taney County Road and Bridge.
See you, Bob. We've agreed we're going to do that, those things. I have thought that if there's not something that leans us away from who we've already started working with, it'd be wise to stick with them.
Correct.
So I would suggest that we set a meeting maybe a week out or whenever they're available for them to come talk to us, and would give myself opportunity to visit with some of the folks they've worked for, which I admitted I haven't done.
Okay.
And you all may want to do the same to see, to Bob's concern, are they the person we want to continue on with?
We have we have some time. Oh gosh, I'm in the wrong month. It's like summer BOE. We have time on Wednesday, I believe, with the changing of our economic development interview and all that stuff, because how it transpired. We have BOE in the morning. We also have some other meetings that morning. We probably could have a Aegis meeting or a discussion. I would think 11:30 or so on Wednesday the 17th, if we could get them here. I mean,
that's not a good day for me, but if you guys want to go ahead and try to do that, well, you can. We've got three or four things that we have brought up for the 17th of this month, and I've seen them.
This is why I'm telling you. The 18th and 19th, I'm traveling.
Yeah.
The following week, we are at Lake of the Ozarks, that entire week of Thanksgiving. Uh-huh. If we don't do it then, it won't be until the 29th or 30th, the last days of the month. So we can push it off until the 29th, which is the first day back from Thanksgiving holiday.
Humor me.
Yes,
what
sir?
You're seeing on Wednesday is items that carry us to 9:30 BOE. We don't have anything after that, is that correct?
Correct. And not knowing how long BOE is going to last, we could, you know, it could easily go to lunchtime.
That's only personal property, though, isn't it?
Right. It shouldn't be that long.
No.
So I'm saying if we could move Aegis to 11:30, that's actually literally 2 hours of BOE. I don't think it'll last that long.
We lumped some of those things you guys reviewed, and as a matter of fact, it probably wasn't 10 minutes long the last time you had BOE.
Well, and we could move Aegis to 11 o'clock, and that way we could be done before lunchtime, and if it went long, then it went long, but... I know I don't want to allocate 2 hours to BOE and then we're done in 15 minutes and waiting for an hour and a half before the next meeting. But
is it only personal property?
No. There's some other stuff in there.
Only personal
this
property.
Is some year-end stuff that we've been putting off.
Right.
It will take at least an hour, from what Donna was telling me. It just depends on how fast we deliberate and all those things. And we're pretty limited in what we can here because summer BOE is over already. You know, so it won't be that in detail, so I would think an hour and a half would be plenty of time. And it may not be, but I'm thinking if we can say Aegis for 11:30, we could be done before lunch. Or at least, if it went long, we could come back after lunch or just go late through lunch with Aegis. But this seems a better use of our time if we did that. That's why we're picking on the 17th. Otherwise, really our next time to meet is the 29th, and our 29th is pretty full already, so it'd really be the 30th. Or the 1st of December.
Can we have this discussion Monday?
Can we have this? Which discussion?
Timing. When we're going to post it. Because you're looking at the 17th. We got plenty of time there. Can we have a discussion about timing of possible...
Are you saying whether or not or at what time we would want to talk to him?
Yeah.
Which one?
What time?
What time?
Yeah.
Meet with them, but to determine the time to meet with them,
Monday.
Contact them Monday.
Yeah.
Whether it would be, so you could research your BOE stuff. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what the reason I get back to that is because I thought they left here, and I didn't know that we didn't vote on it, but I thought they left here with the idea that they were going to research whatever we put before them as a...
Yeah, we didn't vote for anything, and we were in closed session when we talked because it was part of the contract, so therefore there was no audio.
And I didn't. I wasn't here for that meeting.
And you weren't
so
in the meeting for that, and it was...
Okay, well, I'm just...
And since there was no vote, there was no official direction.
I know there was lots of discussion. So
there was.
We could, someone could go ahead and call them and tell them to see if they would be available middle, late morning.
Would you just
on Wednesday?
Just put them on alert, maybe on Wednesday. Just put them on alert and just say, are you guys even available on the 17th? And they may say, we're not here. That solves the problem that it'll be probably the first before we see them again.
Okay. So that's fine.
Sounds like a good plan. All right, we've got an hour and a half. Shall we hammer on duplexes a little bit? The other thing that I've got a heart for is the selling a lot thing.
Subdivision of land is here also.
Subdivision of land, yes. But I'm all for doing duplex first.
That's just the order I had them in. It doesn't matter to me.
Okay, I'm just going to throw one more thing out before I stop Eddie here, and that is Tantone is having their ribbon cutting. They're also having their food today.
Today.
Yeah. Thanksgiving. And just to remind you.
What time is that?
10:30, everything started. The festivities started. The ribbon cutting's like 11:30 or so. 11:30. But anyway, and then dinners, I think the Thanksgiving is at high noon. So anyway, that's just FYI. Let's continue on.
As we look at duplexes, you know, again, there's several things that go on there, but in talking with several developers around here, with duplexes, some of them want to do it in a subdivision type setting. Some of them want just an individual lot here and there, wherever in the county and everything like that. We run into some issues with lot sizes and things like that, and not anything that can't be dealt with. It just depending on how we choose to set this up and how we choose to go about it. I'm thinking of one developer that would like to see us do something with duplexes, but he's hoping to get smaller street widths, smaller lots that would create substandard lots for what we have here. And I, like I said, don't have any problem with any of that. But when we think of the worst case eventuality in the event that the thing burned down and you hated your neighbor and now you want to build on this lot, you've got your own freestanding lot. If we've created a substandard lot, then, you know, we might have to make some kind of provision to say this lot is good for duplex zoning. Now, when you get into your zoning districts, that's taken care of because this is a multifamily zoning district or whatever the case might be. But until that particular time, whatever changes we make in here could create some additional problems. When you get out into the county, I sat with John Soutine. I said, John, I want to do a duplex on here, and it's septic. And he said, okay, you need 4 acres. And he said, you need 2 for each side, or you need to hold the land in common. I said, well, if I hold the land in common, I've shot myself in the foot on what we're trying to accomplish. And he said, well, you know, right now our standard is 2 acres and everything. So just that's the kind of things that we need to deal with as we look into this kind of a thing. Sometimes just a changing of mindset can do. We can deal with some of this stuff and everything like that. So, in talking with Bob and with John and a few other people, what I gave you here on your second page of the packet that I handed you, we just kind of looked at it and said, you know, if you don't want to worry about lots or anything like that, you would say, if you want to make a duplex, you need 16,000 square foot lot, you need 70 foot of frontage, da 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 da. But then why would I want to build a duplex? I mean, I've got to meet all the requirements of 2 houses. What's the advantage to me? The advantage to the developer, I'm guessing, to build a duplex would be that I can take this lot and I can actually get 2 living structures on it, some of the combined building and stuff like that. You know, so I've cut my expense in order to build a duplex. What's the benefit of the person who buys the duplex? if he can't get it cheaper than he can buy a single family house, you know, what's the benefit? I guess what I'm saying is there's a couple different ways you probably need to approach this for the individual that wants to create a subdivision type situation, for the individual that just has a lot that wants to build a duplex, whether it be on sewer or not on sewer. So you got really three different things here to kind of look at, in my opinion. And I talked to Buchanan County about their duplexes, and they let them build duplexes. They're a first-class county, planning and zoning, no building codes. And I said, well, how do you go about it? She said, well, we just treat it like a regular house and everything. And I said, any kind of issue? She said, well, nobody's ever applied to build one. Because if you got to have the same size lot, to, you know, 8,000 here and 8,000 here, why build a duplex? Why not build two homes? I'm guessing. And I'm not a builder, so I don't really know what the advantage would be. I mean, I know you could share some foundation and stuff like that, but normally you keep all your utilities and everything separate and everything. So that's just the things to keep in mind. So as we went down through there, I gave you a few definitions of duplex. You know, to go down through. And I looked at a bunch of different definitions for duplex, and the possibility. But what I settled on was this one that I have here. It says a two-family residential use in which the dwelling units share a common wall, which could be the wall of the garage or whatever it might be, and in which each dwelling unit has living space on the ground floor and separate ground floor entrance. Now, in Taney County, my home's a walkout. I have a complete living structure upstairs and a complete living structure downstairs, and it could be two different living structures. So you could look at that and misconstrue it as a duplex, although it's not a duplex, and they don't share a wall, they actually share a ceiling and a floor. So, you know, in some of the definitions I looked at said duplex is just a single building for with two living units in it.
Well, Eddie, is the insurance deal, is that the big deal? What is the
deal?
The deal
has to do with financing from right now, from what I understand. It's not so much they're having trouble building duplexes or anything like that, but because Taney County is requiring it to be condominium style of ownership and it being a duplex and not a multi-family type building, the financing comes into play due to the common wall and not owning their lot and that kind of thing like that, if I'm not off base here. Mr. Stroppas, have you heard?
Some of the stuff I've heard, yep.
You know, but it dealt particularly with the financing. Now, if you've got a condominium building with three-plus multiple units in it, I don't think it's an issue.
It's not.
But it's just in the duplex-type structure.
I got to ask you, did I forward you all the responses from the attorneys about duplex ordinances?
Yes, sir.
Okay, that's I was looking. It's like I'm looking right now to
my
see if
my pocket's been dinging here just recently.
No, it's not. I looked to see if I forwarded it to you, and I did not.
Okay.
Harry Styron, who represents a couple developers, submitted it, but I think you already had that.
I did. I believe on the back of your packet at one time had given you that.
Because I was trying to see if that addressed all what we're talking about addressing too.
Actually, what I had from Mr. Styron just gone through our code book
is it right here.
All he did was go into. I did that. That's the definition I have of patio home.
Okay, but yeah, he went into our code book and just made modifications.
Right, in the areas that he thought would need to be changed. Now, again, I don't know what the difference between a patio home and a duplex is. I can see the difference between a duplex and a townhome.
There is no official difference
between a patio home and a
duplex. No.
Okay, but I mean, if you with townhomes, you could have three or four strapped together. You may own from a basement, main floor,
right.
Three floors, then they share a common wall.
Right. Here, you can have it back. I have a copy of that.
Seems rather foolish.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Unless we create this some way that is advantageous for you to have a smaller lot to maximize your potential without maximizing your cost.
How many, it'd be interesting, and I guess the guy could go to the assessor's office and see, because you really hit on something there whenever you talked about your home. How many homes do we have that are multi-level where we have two families living in those levels? And we'll have a bunch. And we're talking about side-by-side versus up and down.
And there's several places I can take you now in Taney County where you pull in here and there's a structure, and then you pull around behind, there's another street and a structure. And they're condominium style of ownership and everything. They're not really, I mean, we would look at it and say that's a duplex because it's two units, but it's not really a duplex because of the way it's built. It is one structure with two living units, so it depends on your definition, I suppose. And this definition that Mr. Styron gave said a building designed exclusively for residence by two families or housekeeping units living independently of each other sharing a party wall. So if you really want to interpret party wall and say that's a wall and not a ceiling or a floor.
Right.
But then you'd have to, you understand what I'm saying? You'd have to make sure that you made that differentiation. That definition works fine. That's why I went to the definition that I went to, because some of these definitions, it was just going to be a single building with two living units in it.
Well, what about our motels that's all been changed over? We got motels that are set up as apartments that have four units and then a firewall, four units and a firewall. I mean, this thing gets
It gets real screwy real fast.
Yeah.
And you know, we can't do anything about that which is past. I'm not saying that you want to do anything about that which is future.
Most of those are in city limits, so
yes, that's
something they have to deal with. But I'm talking about just examples of that they've turned those into residences. We're dealing with it every month when we come through our homeless deal with the Christian Associates deal, where they're trying to put people into.
And you know, we're looking at future construction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand that, but I mean, but
you're, I mean, right. I mean, the more you dwell on this thing, that you start seeing, and as I finally got to the place, almost like you were, where what's the benefit of me doing this? You know, unless these rules are written differently, so that it's worth my while as either a buyer, why would I want to buy that? Well, I can buy it cheaper than I can buy a single family home. You know, it's an entry level type place into the homeowner market or something like that. But if it's going to cost the builder as much to build half a duplex as it does a home, it's not going to benefit anybody. So we've really got to think about lot sizes, how we can make that advantageous. I suppose we do. I guess maybe we don't. But there's no use creating a whole bunch of regulations if it's not going to help anybody, I guess is what I'm saying.
Well, I mean, is that the question you should have with people who want to have duplexes? I mean, here we can solve what we think we know, but if this doesn't address the issue, then...
Well, that's why in here I gave you a section for PUD, basically PUD, where we can, I think, because it hadn't been reviewed or anything, somebody can come in, such as... the place over off 265, places like that, where they want to build, they own a piece of property, and everything. And originally when they came in, they wanted to build duplexes. They didn't want to have to deal with setbacks and lot sizes.
Right, they wanted less setbacks.
And then they wanted smaller roads, and then they said, well, we'll go with the bigger lot sizes, but we want the smaller roads. Well, It's not like a supermarket where you can pick, I want this, but in a PUD you could come in and say, here's my plan, here's what I'm going to build. I'll reference you down to Bird Road. My mind's gone blank now.
I can tell you several places, I'm totally, totally against road reduction size. Because it is such a safety hazard.
Yes, sir. Down on Bird Road, there's a little condominium project in there. Done a beautiful job. It's got a little tiny road. I mean, it's a neat place to live, but it could be an issue if you're trying to get two emergency vehicles to the back at one time. I think it's probably wide enough as long as people don't park on the road or anything. But it's one of those deals where he had the option to
remove
setbacks and
put a island in the middle with trees to beautify the thing and flowers. I mean, I can take you to several places where it's really, really nice.
Yes.
But I don't know whether it meets a safety requirement.
But I mean, you know, in a PUD type setting, and this, there's only one phase of this, in a PUD type setting, you can review the whole plan. You'd have road and bridge, you'd have sewer district, you'd have planning and zoning. Everybody kind of look at this plan. Everybody and the developer come to an agreement. Here's where I'm going to build this. I'm going to build duplexes. I'm going to build single family homes here. Here's what I'd like to do with my roads and everything. Come to an agreement, and then when you're done with it, here, go and do.
I would. You asked a question earlier. I had to Google it to find out. You said, what's the difference between a patio home and a duplex? I think we would have to define that.
Yes.
I found a definition of what a patio home is, and it's not what I thought it was. So we just got to define what a patio home is. It's not the same as a duplex based off of this definition.
Right. I didn't think it was. But.
Yeah, I mean, the land is interesting configuration. I mean, you own the land on one side of the building, but not the other
right.
side. You own the front, and usually there's no yard or anything in the back.
Right.
You know, so it's.
But anytime we use a word, we got to
define
the word.
Because I really think if we're defining patio home, and the other people were trying to deal with the problem of what a patio
right.
home is, we want to make sure that we're defining it and then solving that same.
Eventually,
problem.
You're going to have every one of these critters here somewhere. In this area, it's you're gonna whatever type of building there is, it's working in other places. You're going to have it here,
right?
Because that's just the way it goes. You know, as far as what's new and what's available and everything like that. So, so anyway, what I did is gave you a definition of a duplex and of a dwelling unit, and to. Originally, when I looked at this, I thought we should consider maybe just a little bit larger lot for a duplex than our 8,000 square feet, maybe something in the 10,000 square foot range. We're looking at splitting that, so you end up with two 5,000 square foot lots. That being the case, I'm okay with it. We just have to then make provisions to say if you have a lot that was created for multifamily, and if you ever get into zoning districts, you'll have a zoning district. That lot will be what it is, and that's what it's for. And a person could take both those lots and put one house on it, or they could build another duplex back. But just because you've got a freestanding lot there that's substandard, created after a certain date, you wouldn't be able to put a single family home on it. I guess what I'm saying.
What about the areas that we think about, like Powerside? That's where they have to have two or three lots. Would that be an area that would take advantage of duplexes? Where if we had a road upright, you know,
sure.
Like they've got lots, narrow lots, and things like that they could.
There's many 5,000 square foot lots in Taney County, and kind of what we've done, if they were platted before a certain time, we have, and they can meet the requirements of the sewer and the issue of a permit, everything like that, and they can meet setbacks. We'd let them put something on it. I don't know if that's what we want to do or not, but that's what currently happens.
Right. Yeah.
But and again, you know, you may want to let those things stand. I mean, you think out at Oakmont there, where it's septic and well and 5,000 square foot lot. Surely, you know, we don't want to see that many septic systems out there. But they have the right because you know the way it was done. So,
Eddie, is the Harry Styron's idea? Is that something that we could kind of like we're going to do with Clay County's code book? Could we work off of it and see if we could make it work?
Clay County, we'll mention this a little bit. Normally, what most of these places will do in their in their zoning district, they'll have multifamily zoning district, and they'll identify what goes in a multifamily, and they'll say duplex, minimum lot size, this much frontage, basically what I've done there for you. But then it's contained inside of a zoning district. So if I came from a R1 to like an R3, which would be the multifamily, and said I want to put a single family home in here, then I planning zoning look at it and say okay. To do that in this, you need 8,000 square foot. He said, no problem. I've got a duplex lot. It's 10,000 square foot. He builds his house on that, but he takes both sides of that duplex, the lots that were created for a duplex. And then if somebody came back and said, I've got a lot here, it's R3, it's 5,000 square feet, and I want to put a single-family home on it, we'd say no, because you don't meet the requirements for a single-family home. You can build a duplex or whatever's allowed on that size of a lot at that particular time in accordance with that district. It's just, you know, it's a matter of just changing your way of thinking, because we would be creating lots now that aren't conducive to, you know, the standards that we have as far as 8,000 square foot minimum size, things like that. But, I mean, I suppose you could qualify that to say lots created after January 1, 2011, less than this size shall not be considered for use by a single-family residential home. You know, something to that effect. That's very rough for you, of course. But then when you get out into the area where you have the septic issues,
mm-hmm.
you know, it just seems kind of hard to tell somebody you want to build a duplex, all you need is 4 acres. And that way you can split it, and this one, you can sell that half, and you can sell that half. You know.
Well, what I was saying, Eddie, could we, is have you looked at Harry Styron's well enough to say, could we take that?
What Mr. Styron did.
And work off of it to get an emergency, so to speak, change to our code until we get a new code book.
I don't.
You're saying there's too many questions that causes.
Well, what Mr. Styron did is he went into our code book and he found all the places where it dealt with, like in our height ordinance, stuff like that, and he just added the sentence patio home, this and that. With the exception, lot size and frontage requirements, he went in and said, for a patio home subdivision, okay, not just a single one, but for a patio home subdivision, only a public central water sewer system is available, the minimum lot size will be 6,000 square feet. I don't have a problem with that at all. But we're not letting everybody that wants to build, we're saying you've got to be in a subdivision and there's got to be sewer and water. And that's, if that's where you want to head, that's fine. I don't have a problem with that either. But we're basically saying when you get out to where there's septic, no duplexes. Unless, because we've got a provision now, if you want to own the duplex, both sides, you can build it on 3 acres with a septic. And it's okay, according to our code book. But you have to own both sides. You can't split it or anything like that.
On 111, one, huh?
Or you can rent them both out.
Rent them both
out. You just can't split it and sell you half and sell you the other half.
So what you're saying is what he's given us is doesn't cover enough to
it doesn't
get
it
us
doesn't
very
meet
far.
All the criteria.
For, it deals with subdivisions, but not the rural, the rest of the county.
Right.
Excuse me. But a subdivision could be 2 lots.
Yeah, one could be 2 acres and the other could be 38.
Yes.
Yes.
You know, it's just, and maybe you try to address part of it. Maybe we say duplexes. It just doesn't make sense to me to put a regulation in place if we're going to require 4 acres to make a duplex.
Nor myself. And the ones I'm thinking of, it's financing. You mentioned that earlier. One's the things. And anyhow.
But then we're back to the place where if you've got acreage and you want to create, put in a treatment plant and everything, then you bring the lots way down. But that doesn't help you if you just want to build. If you've got 2 acres out here, I mean,
yes,
two acres ought to be plenty to put a duplex on. But there's an issue with regulations with the sewer district and with everybody else that we don't right
but
now.
But you could add something that if you had central, you're good to go. And if,
sure.
If you're not, if you don't have central, then you've got to meet X, Y, Z.
Mm-hmm. Which is what we do now. With everything else, that's what, you know, but I don't have any problem. I mean, to benefit the developer and everything like that, the lot sizes probably need to be a little smaller. We need to look at our frontage and everything like that. But we also have to cover the back end of that in the event worst case scenario. You end up with smaller lots here, you know, you probably don't want people building a house on that. You know, if you're single-family residential subdivision lot size is a certain size, and our single-family home requirement is 8,000 square foot, and you want to end up creating a lot of 5,000 square foot lots, and then later on people want to put a single-family home on them, because to me you end up in that case again with some of the situations you have around here with RV parks that have turned into full-time residences.
I'm thinking about, and it may not have been, from what I'm understanding, it wasn't done perfectly, our height situation that we have, and how we got there is we had developers come in and helped us work through that with their attorneys, sent their attorneys in even, to help us work through that. What if we got Harry Styron and others that have got a plan that they think will work, get them to come in and sit down with us, and let's hammer on this duplex thing some more.
I'd like to get the land planner kind of being the liaison, because if we're going to hire somebody to help with the code book, they probably have the expertise to say we can or can't do that.
Well, that sounds smart. Get that first.
Yeah, I would say let's get that first if it's possible. But once again, if we're not going to delay too much. But anyway,
I've written this up several different ways. I've written it up with smaller lots, with standard size lots. I've written you up a section there that deals with PUDs and how they can go about that and that kind of thing. And that may help a lot of people. A couple of them that I'm thinking of individually, this might fix them if we had something like a PUD that would, you know, where they come in and show you the whole plan. Here's what I'm going to do with my streets and everything like that. And it gives you the ability to review that plan as it was, as opposed to the set regulations that you have in your code book. And then that area would become, you know, designated as a PUD and what it is. That's one way to deal with it and everything like that. But I'd be glad to. I know a couple of these developers that I've talked to on the phone and everything like that, but I'd be glad to get them to come in and sit down and talk and everything like that. But what I've got in front of you right now, telling you that each lot has to be 8,000 square feet, and that if you're out on septic, you've got to have 4 acres and everything, I don't see that accomplishing anything.
Right. No, I don't either.
And like I say, I've written you several different things, and I've written this smaller and a lot of different ways, but and we can do any one of those. We just have to think about worst case scenario and maybe changing that in the future, the way we think. You know, just because you've got a lot doesn't mean that, you know, that lot was created for something special. It doesn't mean you can go back and just use it for anything now. Is what I'm thinking we might, if we create it specifically for something else, it might lock it into that or just a few other uses and not necessarily just like any other lot in the county. So, but anyway, I did add the statement in at the bottom there, 1 hour fire rated partition wall from foundation to roof decking. A lot of concern about, you know, had to go all the way through the roof, had to extend 3 feet above, and I don't know that people wanted to do that or anything like that. And you know, if you take it up to the decking on the inside there, that probably should be sufficient. I don't know. I'm not, you know, like I say, I'm not a fireman or anything like that. No interior setback required on the attached side of the lot containing the duplex. Street side and rear setback standards shall apply. Each dwelling unit have direct existing access to the road. You know, whether it be their driveway or whatever, instead of having a driveway where you have to go through everybody else's property to get out or something like that. But I'd be glad to talk with a few of these people and kind of get their ideas and everything. And some of them I have talked with, and that's why, as we've dealt with this, it just didn't it didn't pan out very well. But I would ask you to look at the PUD on the back. And you know, as a possibility, because, you know, we've had a lot of people saying, you know, I'd like to build this and this and everything, and you can kind of approve them as an area, and then that cuts them a lot of slack, and then inside that they could develop lots for duplexes and things like that.
All right, you want to talk about subdivision of land?
I don't. I'm talked out.
I'm getting kind of at the very least, let me give you what I've got written up.
Gain any more patience. I'm all talked out for some reason with planning zone.
I understand that. I don't take it personal.
It's on you, Eddie.
I didn't do a lot of planning and zoning talking before I went to work here. I've got a couple questions I'm trying to get answered on subdivision land. What you've got there is what's currently in the code book. If you go back a page or two, it was it's written mostly in bold, black and white. That's kind of a rewrite of that. And then on the last was the document that Bob had given us concerning what he'd talked with some of the developers and Kurt and then went back years ago. I'm of the opinion that probably there's different things that can be done, but it appears that from most of the code books I've read, once you hit a 2+ lots, that you need a plat, and they want it to be a subdivision. And that's why you'll find it in everybody's code book, they've got a provision for a minor subdivision. But depending on size of lots, and depending on how many, like if Mr. Strahan was wanting to split off a parcel over here, I'm thinking that can be done as long as it doesn't go into two lots at the same time. He can do that with a survey. It's not, and then we just show that to the board, so we're within probably 2 to 3 weeks maximum hold up time is what it would be. But it appears that, and everything that I've read, that most places want planning and zoning to review the survey and then to stamp it that it doesn't violate, just to make sure that it's got its access standards met. And there's several stamps in my office, too, to that effect, that stamp and say this survey does not violate. And I think that's that 5.2 that we've looked at that says all other subdivisions must be approved by the planning board. It's not necessarily going through the process. It's just for them to, like our chairman would look at that and say, yeah, we understand what's going on here, no big deal. And I think as long as it was a one-lot split under 40 acres, as long as the lot you're splitting off is under 40, that it would be surveyed, you would show the access to it, and that's the way it would go. But when you start hitting multiple lots in there, I believe that's when they're requiring what they call a minor sub. So, but it's in everybody's code book, and I've talked to a couple of surveyors, and they've said that I have not found the state statute that differentiates why, and I've got calls from several people to discuss this with them, but I think there's some different ways to handle some of what we're doing. Doesn't necessarily have to be a minor subdivision, but when you hit a two or more lots, I believe it does have to go into that, and the size of the lot does matter. So if you kind of want to look over that and see, I would just ask you this. Just keep in mind as you're thinking about this also, I think we're all agreed that whatever lots are created, we want them to have access, whether we call that a road or whatever the case might be, that access exists for whoever might own that land or however it may be split up in the future. I would, since Taney County does not include inside their calculations of their lot size and everything, if you plat a road easement or something like that, it's excluded from the size of the lot calculations. Whoever grants that easement or right-of-way or road or whatever the case might be, they basically lose control of that road. They can't build on it. They can't do anything with it. I think we should consider that be considered a road and not that person who granted that not be taxed on that.
I agree.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yep.
Because basically they can't use it for anything anymore. And it's not
consistent. Well, it's dedicated, you're saying.
Right. Well, in other words, if it's platted or something like that, that... Now, I don't think the county should have to be responsible for it.
And Eddie, I've thought about that a minute, and that is, I think that's the way to do it. And those roads that we're talking about need to be addressed by the county commission some other way, or maybe it could be in the code. But we've talked about this and we've faced them where we've got roads that are platted, never built.
I haven't got there yet.
There's all kinds of issues there, but I think we ought to do that. And then as far as maintenance, who's got the authority and how that works, maybe that goes through a road and bridge department.
But you know, basically, for you to split a piece of property off and grant somebody access to that property, you've given up more than just the property you're selling. You've given up some land there. And it just doesn't seem right if you can't use it for anything that you would have to pay taxes on it. Now, how that impacts the county, I don't know. But I mean, until that's vacated again, then
you've got to be on the other end of it and realize that them people that you sell a lot to down on the other end think that whoever sold them the lot's responsible for the driveway, and they, spent $1,800 2 years in a row to keep a road up to what they thought was standard because you didn't want to get them all bowled up.
I know. There would need to be some way to reward that so that once that's platted, because you've granted that, but then who takes care of it?
It's just as much their road as it is yours.
Exactly. They're using it. Well, I'm just saying it doesn't seem right to me that when that's all platted and you'll see it platted in there, that original owner is still having to pay taxes on that.
Mm-hmm.
And I just that's something we need to consider there. And then when do roads need to go in? When we're doing this kind of a thing here. In subdivisions where they come through and get a huge one, we kind of watch that, but I can take you over off of 86 down there. You know, there's all kind of roads platted in, and there's no roads there. In a small situation like this, I don't know that... right now, we say if it's under 5 acres that the road needs to exist, but if it's over 5 acres, it only has to be platted. Personally, I don't know why we make the differentiation on that size. Plat it or don't plat it. I mean, plat it or put it in. It doesn't matter to me either way. If you're buying the property, you would know that there is a road, not a road. But then who takes care of it?
If it doesn't impede on somebody else's entrance or exit, and that's what we come through with the road... doing away with the road, and then we happen to luck out and we have the same ownership as a person, it's easy to do. But when you don't have the same ownership, you can run into some real problems. But that's something that needs to be addressed. I mean, I'm getting tired of paying on 6 acres of road in a subdivision that...
And I didn't talk to you about this before.
I know. I'm just talking about... We're on the same wavelength on that part of it. You got 6 acres of road that you can... sell off his 3-acre tracks if you had somebody else responsible for it. So anyway,
those kind of things to think about. But read over that and see what you think. We just kind of need to decide when does a road need to exist or what down the line. Because when we get into these small subdivisions like that, they don't follow the same rules and regulations as.
Eddie, another thing we get into on that is like farmland, and I want to go, and I'll just use Bobby George Raines' situation down there when that subdivision went in, and he had existing platted streets in there that basically, I don't know how he could have prevented somebody from walking up and down there hunting or entrance and exits to a piece of property that was on the other end to look at or what. It's just a mess whenever you come to that part of it. And I'm not going into, not calling him that, but I'm talking about it in old hillbilly terms. A man pulls up there and goes to walking out across your field, he might end up with some buckshot in his hind end, it's absolutely a trespassing or no trespassing or an argument or...
Yeah, we have people call
us. Yeah, we're going to have to address those issues.
We have people that call us on a regular basis and say, this guy's going down through here, and I'll pull up the property. And I said, well, there's a road down through there. He said, there's no road here. And I said, well, there's a road right there. Mm-hmm. And then this guy may own a lot back in there that he hadn't been there for years and years and years. And I said, well, he owns this lot back here. Well, that's my land. I said, well, not according to what's in the database here.
Oh, yeah.
So, but never, nothing was ever put in. And so the guy's had his cattle running over and everything like that. And he's bought everything around him. And just never has been vacated sometimes. So.
Now, the vacation of those lots, I'd say the 75% of the ones we do are same landowners wanting to vacate it out, so it's not that situation. So,
but read over that, and then, like I say, I've got a couple more calls, you know, and to some people just trying to find out exactly where the state statute kick in, because they'll all say, well, if you do one here, like, you know, here's the parents' farm and they split off for a child. We just do it with survey, stamp it. It's got access, everything. Whether they use that access or not, we don't care. If they want to use the other driveway, I don't care. Just need to know that it has the access. And then,
And the reason I used 50 foot in my example was that gives you room for a utility. If somebody else buys past that point, they have to have 50 foot access, and there's nobody can block them off of a utility.
And we found sometimes that ingress, egress easements and things like that aren't quite as clean.
Yeah.
Sometimes they can be real particular to an individual. So, of course, my preference is that we declare it to be a road easement. I don't know what all the stipulations are there or anything like that. But that being the case, since that's what we're requiring, they shouldn't have to pay the taxes on it, I don't think, once it becomes that. They've lost all benefit of it. They can drive up and down it, I suppose, like anybody else. Although, if you do just an ingress-egress easement, the person who grants that does not actually have the right to drive up and down it either. Just the one who's granted to. So easements can get really, really ugly. And that's why we've used the term road and everything like that. But I think there needs to be some relief for the person that's doing the platting or the surveying or whatever the case might be. And of course, that'll have to trickle through James's office also.
Yeah.
And I don't know what his rules and regulations might be concerning that. I just don't know.
I'm going to make a motion to recess. I'm about P&Z'd. My mind is on about 15 subjects that we've talked about here. And
Eddie, thanks for bringing all this to us, and we'll look at
it. And I'll do some more work recess on it, and then are we meeting again anytime soon? Or I'll just
think we've got anything planned, do we, Jim? Do you?
I don't think we have anything until
when I get some information back from these people here, and I'll yell at you.